love Might Delete Later.
I bloody hope you do. You can support our show by using the new Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment.
Just smash that link in the show description and support us now so we can keep making this podcast.
Thank you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Might Delete Later, where we get guests to dredge up their first ever social media posts, their worst ever social media posts, and one they like.
I'm Stevie, and I hate social media with an ardent passion.
I'm her sister Gina, and I quite like it with an ardent passion.
Can you
and
quite today, like me with an ardent passion?
Well, I do now. And today our guest is comedian and great friend to Stevie, Nish Kumar.
So you will have seen him on literally every panel show that ever was and ever will be, but he most notably hosts The Mash Report and is about to front a new American satirical show called Hello America. And Ooh. He also is known for getting a lot of shit on Twitter for being left-wing. Brexit was a real time for him. He was against it. I've been friends with him since he worked in a call centre in like 2012 and have three followers, so it's quite fascinating. And also, I'm not going to lie, slightly worrying to see how much his social media presence has grown, really.
We recorded this episode before lockdown, and it was a fun one. Despite having such a seemingly divisive online presence.
Just so Austrian right now.
I am. Nish is pretty positive about the whole thing, except about Instagram.
Yeah, he doesn't like Instagram, does he? And his girlfriend Amy sorts it out for him. He's very much a Twitter guy. But have a listen, and look, I think just be kind to people online, please, even if they don't share your political views, okay? Check out our Instagram at Might Delete Later Pod for all the posts that Nish mentioned in this episode.
And shout out to Sony Fourth Floor Creative, where we recorded this episode.
And Eskenazi skewed. Enjoy!
Enjoy!
I'm going to start the podcast by saying what I would delete this week is this feature because I've forgotten what my thing was.
Okay.
Okay. I would delete the phrase, oh, it is what it is. I fucking hate that phrase. Pisses me off. People say it all the time when you want to have a conversation about stuff. They go, well, you know what? It is what it is. And it's like, oh, great. And then the world never progressed. That's what I delete. I hate it.
Very good.
Pisses me off.
Okay. I delete the concept of roots. In your hair.
Vegetables. Oh.
So I think hair should just stay the same length.
Hang on.
And then you cut it, and then that's your haircut.
Oh, that'd be good.
No, I go back on that, because then I'd have the same haircut I had when I was 8.
That's true. Yeah. Oh my God, you had a bowl cut when you were 8, remember?
I did. I wanted to
Yeah,
be like
I'd
George.
Have a flat top.
That's all right.
What's a flat top?
It's like where you, it's basically like if you when you shave the back and sides.
And like it just a crew cut
goes
vibe.
Straight up. Yeah, yeah. But no, it just goes straight up. Think the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Or Hey Arnold's friend in
or
Hey Arnold.
Hey Arnold's friend.
Oh, he was the sickest.
Well, those are my two style icons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good.
Okay.
I thought you meant roots as in root vegetables, Steve.
Yeah.
I'd never delete root veg.
You don't like parsnips?
Whenever, no, it keeps us regular.
It keeps us regular. So it keeps us seeing well. That's actually a myth. It doesn't keep us seeing well, no.
What I would delete this week is the phrase, get Brexit done.
Yeah.
So
I'll
delete that phrase.
Sure.
We're recording this in the lead up to the election. And I just, if I hear one more person say, get Brexit done, I think my head is going to explode.
It also makes no sense because you can't just like, it's like a football chant. You're like, no.
But also, it's mad because you sort of go, it's going to take years to resolve all of the customs negotiations. There's so much to do. And I think, you know, in 11 months' time, when we're once again facing another deadline, because the withdrawal agreement opens us up to a December 2020 deadline, what are they going to, like...
What are they going to still be saying then? That? Still get it done.
Do it again, but just do
get,
it more.
Just get it done. Just get it.
We're going to be saying that for a year now.
Also, like, it was supposed to be this great thing, this amazing thing that was going to, like, give us all free. And now everyone's just like, oh, just finish it.
Everyone is like that.
Like, the main argument is just... well, we just finish it quickly.
Yeah, from all the people who were so there for it and now just like, stop, make it stop. Like, great. So good. That's a good point. Is what it is.
Are you
done.
Fed up of talking about Brexit?
Lots of people say, I'm fed up of talking about Brexit. Or you must be fed up of talking about Brexit. First of all, it's like, my job is to do, one of my jobs is to do comedy about politics.
Yeah.
And so it's a bit indulgent to be like, oh,
I'm bored.
So bored of my, let's face it, quite easy job.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to talk about, you wouldn't believe it. I have to talk about, but also I think it's quite a sort of, it's quite an indulgent line to take.
Agreed.
Like something that could have a really damaging impact on the country. The idea that you could sort of be bored of that,
yeah,
I think is...
That's quite privileged.
It feels quite privileged. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. I find that with politics in general, like, oh, I'm so bored of politics, or I'm just...
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, well, that's easy for you to be, because if, depending on what happens, your life doesn't really change that much.
Yeah.
So you're fine, you can check out, but
I understand if, like, if people who have no professional interest in this get bored of politics, that makes sense to me. But I'm bored of people who work at various levels in politics and journalism and even comedy about politics and journalism, when they say, oh, I'm so bored of Brexit, you're like,
it's
that
kind
is
of
a really,
job.
It's your job.
It's not helpful.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Anyone.
That's
yeah.
not,
feel
you don't, that's not how anything works.
No, I feel you. You're right.
What would you say your relationship is with social media?
Complicated.
Yes.
Very complicated, as everyone's relationship is.
Yeah.
So my relationship with it starts, I guess, with MySpace. Like, I think I was on
was
MySpace.
It?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you straighten your hair in some sort of emo fringe?
No. I wasn't.
And Tom Hardy.
No,
that was
I didn't. There aren't loads of pictures of me in my underpants.
Damn
and
it.
If there were, I suspect they wouldn't be as desirable as pictures of Tom Hardy in his underpants. Yeah, so I was on MySpace, and that all seemed to be fine. And then I was sort of part of the first wave of Facebook users.
Yes.
Around my second year of university. So
2006?
Maybe 2006. Yeah.
Yeah.
Late 2006, early 2007.
Yeah.
And I remember the sort of excitement of that. It was really just a good way of organising your friendship at university. Like, it was a good way of letting, because mobile phone technology wasn't quite where it is now.
It was Snake.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the equivalent of being able to sort of send group texts and group WhatsApps. You could organize events on Facebook and that was all it really seemed to be, and for photo sharing. And so when we were at university, it just seemed to sort of...
Take out your digital camera and then upload 300 images of the same night.
Genuinely.
Or plug in your old Nokia camera and upload a photograph, which by the time it was blown up to a moderate-sized desktop computer screen, was absolutely indecipherable.
Yeah.
Like,
fully.
It was like a magic eye picture.
And all of the albums were called, like, Friday Night Lash.
Thursday Night Lash. January 2018. Not January 2018.
No,
because
that was 2 years ago. That was Brexit. Cool, bye.
I've lost track of time. But yeah, I remember it all being very exciting, and I do remember... When you watch The Social Network, I do remember a point at which people started to use Facebook
as a
verb.
I do too. I remember seeing Steve using it and being like, what's she doing?
Well, and also people started using it as a verb. Like, it's a sort of quite
Facebook
big bit in the movie where you Facebook someone.
It's weird that we have that, like, those memories of the feeling of it being created and what the opportunity was, and then finding ourselves here, and it's like, God, how much has happened.
But that's right. So I'm technically on Instagram, by which I mean my girlfriend has set up an Instagram under my name.
Amy Annette listened to a podcast.
You're a Twitter
man. Amy Annette listened to a podcast. Her and Aisling B, who is a friend of ours, decided that I needed to have an Instagram presence.
Mm.
And so they set one up.
Mm.
And so now I'm, you know, through a third party.
Yeah, you're loading,
on
but you're
Instagram.
Not like engaging.
Do you okay it, or do they just put anything out? So have you looked at it recently?
Sometimes
you know it's pictures of your ass.
Yeah.
It's only pictures of your butt.
In that case, you're welcome, the internet. what a chocolate treat for you all. Because I just don't have the enthusiasm for it, because I feel like I've seen the full life cycle of Facebook.
Yeah.
And now I am like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. In the sequel, when he's in the second Jurassic Park movie, he's like, because everyone says, oh, Instagram's nice because it's just pictures of dogs. But there's a bit in the second Jurassic Park film where Jeff Goldblum says, oh, it always starts out like this. Ooh, ah, and then there's the screaming and the running.
Oh, yes,
and that's how I feel about all forms of social media now. Like, I remember Facebook when it was a way of organising five people to come round to a barbecue at your university friend's house as opposed to a Petri dish for neo-Nazism.
Literally, yeah. Like, and like, all of your older family sharing, like, right-wing memes. And you're like, sick, I want to leave.
Yeah.
And with Twitter, I joined in 2010. Again, I didn't really have any enthusiasm for it because even by 2010, Facebook had become a slightly different thing. And I think also, that's not even just a really bad thing. It also became a thing because your older relatives were on there.
Yeah.
Like, my brother got busted for not going to see my aunt and uncle because he said he was ill, but then my cousin found pictures of him drunk up.
It's not your safe space anymore. Like,
Because
I remember I was at that uni, I was like posting stuff and I was like, mom and dad are going to see it.
Yeah.
So you're like, then you start to like censor yourself, and actually it just had been this space where you were like, oh, cool, like this space
became
amazing.
Instagram became that place. It was like, oh, I can go on Instagram and post pictures of my tits or whatever I'm doing, and then get kicked off again. But like,
did you get kicked off?
No,
that would be amazing.
She only posts pictures of her tits, you only post pictures of your ass.
But you can like put like, you know, whatever caption you want, and you feel like it's a little bit of a safe space, and then obviously then your parents join Instagram and then which is lovely, I love that.
Or on the other side, you feel like it's a safe space and then your career takes off and then it becomes it becomes a space where like you were in conversations having fun stuff, sharing things you like, and then it becomes a space where you don't have control of that anymore.
There was a period of but also I think the forum itself has changed, because I remember when you first joined Twitter, it was mainly sort of group practical jokes.
And like Catelyn Moran.
There were sort of people doing serious and interesting stuff with it, but it was very different. It was people doing, some pretty incredible pieces of journalism.
Yeah.
You know, all the way that this sort of Arab Spring was covered through Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And the way that it oxygenated the kind of Black Lives Matter movement. It's really interesting hearing people who are involved in those things talk about Twitter particularly, because it was such a... Because also it's a public forum, because technically you can't access Facebook unless you have a Facebook account, and it's the same with all of those things. But Twitter is entirely, completely accessible.
Yeah, that's
even if you don't have a Twitter account, you can still the website still, the individual Twitter pages still appear as websites. Mm. And so, like, it was half Rob Delaney being funny, and the other half was, people using it as a tool to do incredible pieces of journalism and write about things that maybe wouldn't necessarily have been of interest to the gatekeepers in more established media outlets.
Yeah, that's very, very
true. I'm always very grateful for the things I've learned from social media that have come from areas that I have no direct experience of.
Thinking
of things like trans rights.
Yeah, same.
A lot of new feminist writing, especially lots of feminist writing from women of colour. There's lots of conversations about class that I've been privy to in a way that I wouldn't have been without Twitter, because otherwise you're only getting your information from...
You're in like a little echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're in what they allow to be kind of platformed. Otherwise it kind of democratises the editorial platforms a bit, really.
Yeah, totally. I'm always wary when people say, oh, social media has got us all locked in echo chambers, because I would argue I was in more of an echo chamber when I was growing up, because I only got information from
the direct people
curated
around
news sources and the direct
the thing is, you have like the opportunity, the access for it not to be. The problem is a lot of people don't curate that. I always say to people in like talks and stuff, I'm like, they're like, oh, my feed is making me feel bad, or like it's the same people and same stuff, and I'm like, well, that's like going to an art gallery and standing in front of a piece of art and being like, I hate it, and not leaving.
Yeah.
Like, unfollow people, follow more interesting people. Like, you can do that yourself, but you're not curating that space.
Because I follow loads of women of colour on Instagram and people who are just like, as in just to learn stuff, but I had to be like, right, who are the people that I should be following? Who are the interesting people?
I'm the same as you. Like, I feel really like, social media relationship is kind of odd in some ways, but like, I feel I feel like I've mostly benefited in the last years because I've just listened and learned so much stuff.
Yeah.
And it's amazing
There is plenty to be said for that. And I mean, even in terms of the stuff that you did with the law change in this country, was also partly distributed.
Started all on social media.
It all came from, you know, and that's an example of it fueling grassroots activism, which is always going to be an extremely positive thing. I got the chance to talk to DeRay McKesson, who was one of the people who was sort of on the ground in Ferguson.
Oh, wow.
And it was really interesting talking to him about the kind of early days of Black Lives Matter and how they used Twitter as an organising tool.
Yeah.
And so there is all of that as well. The problem is that it ultimately, as much as we talk about these things as open platforms, there are gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Just because there's fewer of them and you're not talking about an editorial staff or sort of layers of it, ultimately, Mark Zuckerberg now edits the entire world.
Yes,
exactly. So we've, you know, in a way, as much as we've sort of torn down gatekeepers, we haven't really torn them down. We sort of folded them up and
we've
put them in the pocket
them.
Of one overlord gatekeeper.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Nish, you're a Twitter man. You joined in 2010.
Yes.
9 years you've been on Twitter.
Yes. That's when you phrase it like that,
yeah,
it sounds depressing.
Quite horrific, but well done. And you brought three posts for us to discuss.
Sure.
Your first one, which I went and found.
Yeah, which I don't remember. I have no idea what it would be.
So literally, I found out so for this podcast, I put a code into the top bar and you can go back to like the first ever Twitter post you ever did.
Really?
Which is terrifying. It makes me feel like a journalist that works for the Mirror. Hey. But it's fine because your first, it's so cute.
It's so on brand.
It's so cute. Well, you have two. I picked the first one, then I picked one of the first ones. On the 20th of June 2010, you tweeted, watching Poirot. And then you put, it's fun shouting, I bet he did it, everyone. It's like the cutest thing. We're just sitting on your own watching Poirot.
No likes, no retweets.
No likes, no retweets.
Didn't hashtag Poirot, didn't at anyone. Just telling them the world what you were doing.
What were you doing in 2010?
2010.
Apart from Poirot.
No, so I remember quite specifically what I was doing. I was doing a sketch show in Edinburgh with Tom Neenan, my friend.
Yes, because your third tweet, you were talking to him. Your first ever tweet, you were chatting. And I was like,
oh,
our friends forever.
Sense. Yeah. Tom and I were doing a sketch show in Edinburgh as the sketch double at the Gentleman of Leisure. And he, actually him and Ed Gamble had already been on Twitter for a while. And I'd also had a couple of conversations with, I distinctly remember having a conversation in a car with a comic called Tiernan Duya, Tiernan was like basically trying to explain to me what Twitter was. I really vividly remember it. I see Tiernan all the time now, and he's a lovely chap, but he's very funny. But he was one of the first.
What was he saying?
Twitter comedians. He's literally explaining to me the premise of Twitter. I really remember. I think we'd done a gig in Southampton, and he was literally explaining to me, "Oh, there's this thing where you can just write." And I was just like, "What's the point?
What
of
do
that?
You write and who to?"
I think he had done a Twitter gig. Because again, in the sort of early years of Twitter,
it was quite a big stuff.
Yeah, they put like a sort of gig that was live tweeted, essentially.
Oh, sick.
And I think that Twitter had organised that. What year was Twitter founded? Was it 2008 or something?
Oh my gosh, such a good question. I have no idea.
No, I have no idea either.
We'll find out. We'll put it in.
It had certainly been around for a couple of years by that point.
Okay, cool. Well, Rose Matafeo was on it in 2008.
Yeah.
So like, I think it was around that time.
Yeah,
because
right.
Because most of the people, you know, it says like your username, it says like when you started.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
loads of my friends who were like in their 30s and stuff.
21st of March 2006, but I don't think it caught on.
Kicked off
2008. It was just Catelyn Moran and Rob Delaney talking to each other for like 2 years, and then.
So good.
But I remember that thing of like the first tweet you did, just being like, "Okay, here I go." Like, what?
And who are you talking to?
I had no followers.
I was very resistant to it, but then I'm. The weirdest thing about my relationship with Facebook is that I just signed up for it, whereas normally I'm very resistant. I didn't get a mobile phone until I went to university.
Yeah.
I didn't get Twitter for years. I was very I'm always very resistant to any sort of change.
So you could see the use of Facebook, though. You could see the use for
it. Well, what happened was a friend of mine switched university. We switched university courses. Mm. And so he moved to a different uni. And so it was the reason we had Facebook was it was a way of staying in touch with him.
Well, that's like what it originally was, right? In like unis, it was friends a uni networking thing. So that's why it was used the best. But then Twitter, it was kind of like, I'm talking to anyone.
Yeah, I truly did not see the point of it.
Did not get it.
And then we would go, when in the lead up to Edinburgh, there was this sense of like, well, it might be good if we were on Twitter. The
promo.
Yeah. I think it was. I think it was sort of sold to me as like a way of promoting.
Well, do you know what? 9 years later, I feel like you're doing all right here.
Yeah, it does work. Also, so your Poirot tweet, you obviously got a taste for it. Mm-hmm. Not Poirot on Twitter. Because then 2 days later, you tweeted very much something that you'd tweet now. Mm. Daily Mail blames England's performance at WC on mass immigration. This is not a joke.
So there we go. Same nishy, 9 years later.
Yeah. Loving it.
Like, couldn't be more just you on Twitter for
it's
9 years.
It's great. I mean, it's good to know that I've always been a tedious bore.
Not a tedious bore. It's a man who cares, guys. Man who cares.
Same truth to power.
Man of the peeps.
Or speaking truth to power.
So second post is one you regret. Is there a post that you can pinpoint in your head that you wish you hadn't posted? Or
yeah. There's a few things. So part of the reason I regret posting this is I was a bit drunk. I was at a friend's wedding. And I just turned my phone on and I, you know, sort of instinctively turned Twitter on, which is a weird thing if you think about it. You sort of, when you wake up, you don't open the window and go, "What's happening, everyone?" Like, that's weird.
And I'm going to do that now.
Yeah. And somebody had tweeted something, which is sort of is an occasional thing that we all get. And when I say we all, I mean anyone who is in the public sphere who is not... middle class or upper middle class or posh straight white man,
mm-hmm.
is that if you do anything creative and you're not from that group, you will always be accused of banging on about the thing that makes you not part
of
that group.
Yes.
So banging on about being a woman, banging on about being gay, banging on about being whatever, X, Y, Z, whatever it is. So somebody had said something to me that was to the effect of, "Why do you always bang on about being Indian?" And I replied... I quote tweeted it and replied, "I'm so brown, sorry. Indian, brown Indian."
That's funny.
Yeah, which is fine. It was funny, but then about half an hour later, the problem is you have to adjust to having more followers than
your
10 friends.
Yeah, if you
sit
that in a room with us as absolutely. Friends, yeah, like, exactly. it's funny, but then you put it on Twitter and you're like,
then you put it on Twitter and you sort of open someone up to... And it's not, you know, it's not even the worst... version of a pylon, but it's you sort of open someone up.
So you've directed your followers to them.
And then I spotted that they deleted their account, and then I felt very bad.
Oh shit!
Because it was, you know, I also don't agree with not engaging with all of those things, because I think part of the problem, part of the reason we've ended up in the socio-political situation we've ended up in, is there's been too much of an emphasis on not having uncomfortable conversations with
Agreed.
People, and also just sort of, you know, just sort of going, "Oh, well, those are just their views."
Yes.
Different generation, X, Y, Z. And I think that's a problem. But I think there is a more constructive way to have that conversation than to post a tweet about it and have loads of people reply to it being like, "What an idiot, what an idiot."
Well, like Carrie Lloyd had that thing where I can't remember what
Bloody
she...
Bloody Good Period thing.
Yeah, it was the Bloody Good Period.
Oh,
and
God.
Then Graham Linehan's followers just completely piled on. And it was because he knew what he was doing. Like, he knows the sway that he has. And whenever he replies to anybody, all of his followers see it.
Yeah, yeah.
So then to be like, "Oh, sorry." Like, it's like he didn't realise. Like, you did realise.
Yeah, and like for you to realise that, I don't think a lot of people do realise that. And actually, to be fair, I've only just come to that understanding that, like, we all want to think of ourselves as the people in these rooms having chats with our friends. Mm. And then you get to a point where you go, actually, there are 50,000 people who are looking at everything I say. And however much I don't want that to, that scares me, you also have to go, there's such a massive responsibility in that. Mm. And like, you're a human, so sometimes you don't want to engage and sometimes you want to make a joke because it's easier, like you did there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then off the back of that comes something that you can't really control. So you have to foresee that. And I think it's being able to do that is quite responsible because I don't think a lot of people do that online. No. Then they realise
or know that they have to.
No.
You know, I'm a stand-up comedian. I could have retold that anecdote on stage and made essentially the same joke and not included the person's name.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, that's a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. That's when I discovered the art of the subtweet.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
Very strong and subtle.
It took literally 7 months to figure out what that meant. For so long, I was like, can't stop subtweeting. Like, what are you doing? No, I don't know what I was saying.
Well, because like words and vernacular move so quickly on Twitter, I end up Googling everything.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So that like feral hogs thing, because it goes so quickly that it's in meme stage when I've got to it.
That's
so I can't get to the actual source of the information. Anyone listening, it's the last year there was 30 to 50 feral hogs. And
it was,
Google it. Yeah. Just Google it and it was in 3 to 5 minutes. Just Google it.
It was somebody trying to explain that they should not change gun laws in America because they have to deal with 30 to 50 feral hogs every three to five minutes when their
children are playing.
It was
like it
was
amazing.
A tweet. That's someone's
but
actual
it,
life.
It took me like 45 minutes because the Guardian had then done an explainer. So was like, thank God. So obviously like news sites have picked up on it and being like, people need to know. Because I Googled, there was something as well to do with the Queen dying or something. And there was
a faked WhatsApp group that had revealed the Queen was dead.
Yeah.
And then once you go into it, you're like, I'm lost already.
But it was all their names. It was like Eggy or something. I can't remember
what his
name
was. Yeah, it was like, it was something like that.
And I was like, what is that? And you feel like, I feel like I'm a 70-year-old woman. But
do you know what? I had a weird thing with I stan, right? So like, I stan.
We stan.
We stan. But when that started happening, I only heard of it because I was outside a co-op in a pink wig and these girls came up and were like, we stan, like screamed at me. And I was like, and I said, I tried to stand, but no, I hate it. I lie in bed thinking about it.
Oh, no.
I said, I tried to stand, but I can't quite.
That's fine. That doesn't make
That's
sense.
That's fine.
No.
That just means that you have, like, low self-esteem.
I know, but they looked at me and went, oh, and walked off.
Yes, because you didn't understand what stand meant.
They were like, I stand. I was like, I tried to stand, but I can't quite. And they were like, oh, have a good day.
I
like, left. I was
truly
like, oh, I didn't know what it meant.
I couldn't believe. Because when I first heard that term, I was like, there's no...
It's
like,
not Eminem. It can't be Eminem.
Yeah, but it is.
Sick though, isn't it?
It's so weird. And also, most of the people saying we stand do not know what that song is at all because they're all like seven.
They're born after it.
Tried to put over a version of myself that's like trying to learn and be kinder. And now I'm about to tell a story that is in of itself slightly cruel. But it's a process, guys.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm proud of this is because he is a first-rate bellend.
Because it appears more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, it was that he dug up the tweet. That's what I think was extraordinary. What? So in 2000, I remember all of the circumstances around this. In 2016, he wrote something about Beyonce. She wasn't being black in the correct way. So this was sort of in the aftermath of...
Know about that.
It's sort of in the aftermath of Formation and then her... the performance at the Super Bowl, which was is still technically Coldplay doing the Super Bowl, even though everyone's like, why were they there at Beyonce's performance? She was like doing a guest slot, but all the imagery around Formation and this sort of extraordinary stuff she was doing around that time, and there was something, and it really wound me up. And
it's entitlement of feeling like you can say that shit.
Yeah, totally, totally.
How do you know?
Yeah.
What gives you any, anyway, sorry.
I was definitely trying to do, I definitely remember being, trying to do stand-up about it and not quite being able to get past the naked anger that I had for his attitude.
Right.
And so ending up sort of jettisoning the material. And then, but there was one joke where I said that he was, what would happen if someone injected white privilege into a gammon steak.
I remember this.
And that was the only thing that I tweeted that and left it. 2.5 years later, I had agreed to do Question Time, and it was the first episode of a new series, and in the last episode of a previous series, David Dimbleby said, and the first episode of next series will be joined by Piers Morgan and Nish Kumar. Oh. And he then started tweeting me he then started saying to me, well, I hope you've got as much, you know, I hope you can handle slagging me off behind my back. And I was like, I have no idea. I do not remember slagging you off. I mean, I
this
do.
Is like fighting talk yeah. for
it was really
time.
Weird.
Like
and I do. I was like, I do. I have absolute contempt for you, but I don't actually remember expressing that publicly. And he had dug up that tweet.
Oh, God.
And he then reposted it. It was like, what do you think about this? And I was like, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually my best work,
I'd
say.
I do think it's pretty funny.
It's kind of odd, though, isn't it? That, like, it's not kind of odd. It's overtly odd that, like, a guy with that platform doing that job will hear that he's working with someone and then go out of his way to find evidence.
I don't know what the truth of this is. The rumours I've had rumours fed back to me by people who have worked for him.
Yeah.
That he obsessively searches his own name.
Right.
And he has assistants who... So, and again, let me heavily caveat this by saying I don't know if this is true or not. Yeah. And I also... There's a part of me that suspects it can't actually be true just because of the amount of, you know... Just because the amount of sort of labour it would require. Mm. But apparently he has someone on his staff that archives tweets and negative comments
later
people have done to then... User,
well, I'm glad they're putting the energy into the world in a good way that's really needed.
Well,
but again, I don't know if that's true. And there's a part of you that thinks it can't be because the sheer volume
oh my God.
Of
twattering.
Online conversation about him
about
that he generates.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's part of what he does.
It's constant.
But we're saying Piers Morgan is what would happen if you injected white privilege into a gamma steak.
I stand by that. Yes, yes.
Yes.
I'd be very proud of it.
And I stand by that.
Do you know what? I stan it. I fully stan.
Okay, so we've got a feature that I stand personally.
Yeah.
And I also stand with. It's a little feature called Follow and Follow Block. And we give you three people and you just say whether you'd follow, you'd unfollow them, or you'd block them.
Okay, great.
And obviously, the three people we're going to give you is Ed Gamble.
Yeah.
Great comedian, Taskmaster, everything. Tom Neenan.
Yeah.
Writer of MASH Report. And James Acaster. So who would you follow, unfollow and block? And beware that the difference, there is a subtle difference between unfollow and block.
Yeah, yeah.
Block is you literally don't want to see their shit anymore. Whereas unfollow is like, nah, take it, leave it.
I'll block Acaster.
Oh, that was fast. Why did you go block first?
He's not on Twitter.
He's not on Twitter more anymore. So in a way, it is
a cheat.
It does the least social damage to me.
Is James Acaster on Twitter?
Yeah, but I would never block James Acaster.
Okay, great.
Who's James Acaster?
So about... 8 years ago, James was on Russell Howard's Good News. Yeah. And when the stand-ups would do little slots on Russell Howard's Good News, and they would have their name repeated over and over again on the screen as a background, and they misspelled James's name as James Acaster. And then that Twitter account now exists.
Oh, my God.
And it is James's
just tweets about
alter
Nish.
Ego. It just
do you
tweets.
Know what? You know, we talk about the internet and how fucking... shit it is. But then we also things like that and I just go, I just
it's
love
very
people.
Funny.
No, this
people
is,
are so funny.
This is the thing about the James Acaster Twitter account, because it's sort of having a parallel career to James. but also like it's sort of written in almost borderline nonsensical language.
Oh, I love
yeah, it's
it.
Like it's like he can't spell, he doesn't really understand anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's really stupid.
I love
it.
Yeah.
You've got a parallel haven't you got a Twitter
yes,
account?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's,
there are
what's
lots
your
of
one?
I actually can't remember.
Oh, shit.
There's a couple of like faked Nish Kumar Twitter accounts as
Excellent.
Well. But they exist in the same universe as the James Acaster.
It's like a parallel universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It really is.
So fun. I only really have fake accounts if they're trying to like hurt me. So, I'm, you know, I have fake accounts of guys trying to like make up rumours. I don't really have fun ones. I'd like it if someone made like a Gina Fartin or something. And it was just like really stupid. That'd be so much fun.
I'll do that if you want.
Okay,
mate,
great.
That's fine.
It's less fun Solid. If you do it.
Yeah, and I've told you.
I have to be like
well.
Surprised by it, even though I've asked people to now do it. Anyway, okay, so follow and follow block. So you're blocking James Acaster.
Okay, yeah. Who are you following and who are you unfollowing out of both great friends, Ed Gamble and Tom Neenan?
Well, I'll unfollow Tom Neenan because Tom
Harsh.
Neenan and I work together so often that if I unfollow him, I feel like he could...
You'll lose your job.
Well, no, I feel like he could tweet about... having a real nightmare day.
True.
I feel like it would create more of a safe space for Tom to tweet about, you know,
there was that...
writing for a show, the host is being a complete nightmare.
There was yeah. that lovely moment on the MASH report where there's like a photo of it, and you know it, I don't know why I'm telling you, but it's just nice, where, what was it that happened? A report had just come in, and there's a photo of Tom handing you the stuff that he'd just written for you.
It was some leaks about the Yellowhammer impact report into a no-deal Brexit. That came out during the recording, and Neenan... So, like, we finished the recording and then...
Well, he gets drunk in the room and watches, and he said he was pissed. And then this happened, he's like, shit, I've got to write all this stuff about Nish.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he writes, not all, but lots of the stuff that Nish does. And then, like, and then he just handed it to you. Wow. And there's a lovely, like, you could just see his little face. And it was like, friends.
Yeah, and also,
like, let's think back as well, listeners, to... You know, you on Twitter in 2009, one of your fourth tweets was you and Tom, like, chatting.
Well, that's,
like, that's very normal to you, but people don't... I don't think people think when someone's in a position of doing these kind of shows and something, working with these people, that they've been friends for 10 years.
Yeah,
it's so great that you've gone through that together.
You're in that double act.
Yeah, and now you are
still in a double act.
Yeah.
In a way.
100%.
So
it's
lovely.
Great. It's absolutely great. So, because at the moment... If he complains about me, I am going to see it.
Yes, truth.
I want to now... reintroduce the... anonymity of social media for him.
Perfect.
And I'll follow Ed Gamble so I can learn about fitness and heavy metal.
Okay, sick. That's good.
Good answer.
Tweet about that. So, Nishi.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
I know you've had a mad week and you're a very busy man, but you've been a friend to my sister for 10 years and we always love you.
I love you both.
Yeah,
it's
and you're
been a
bloody
pleasure
great.
To be here with the Martin sisters.
I mean, it always is. What did you say before? The mackerel down? What was he called?
The TikTok Mitfords.
Yeah.
I mean, neither of us are on TikTok, but
now we are.
It's the vibe that can. In fact, we were actually talking the other day. We should do a TikTok.
We got drunk and went, we should do a TikTok.
We
and then
do
at
a
the
TikTok.
End, but as we left, we were like, we won't do a TikTok. No, I'll see you tomorrow.
That's the end. But that's what we'll do. We'll do a TikTok Mitfords.
Amazing.
Please like and subscribe. Just go deep into your own grid and just send us your weird and wonderful, very early Instagram posts or Twitter screenshots and we will repost our faves.
Yes, and also remember, have a think about your relationship with social. Don't get too precious about it. It's meant to be fun, but if you're really worried, then you might as well just delete later.
Bye!
Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.